morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty, Washington. Today is Thursday, August 31st, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Some Gabonese rejoice after the military seized power and detained President Ali Bongo Ondimba.
Gabonese people are rejoicing because they're free. They're free from a family that ruled over 56 years. And as you said, the military just took control of the country less than 24 hours. I hope that they will be sensitive to the Gabonese people.
At least six protesters and one police officer are killed in anti-UN mission protests in eastern Congo. Observers and human rights defenders call for safeguards in a possible Kenya-led peacekeeping mission to Haiti. Dozens are arrested in a raid on a same-sex wedding in Nigeria. The world marks African Traditional Medicine Day today, Thursday.
Traditional medicine has made enormous contributions to human health and has enormous potential. We urge all countries to commit to examining how best to integrate traditional and complementary medicine into their national health systems.
And Namibia's desert lions are forced to hunt in the ocean for food. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Some Gabonese are expressing joy after the country's military seized power early Wednesday and detained President Ali Bongo Ondimba. The new leaders have named General Brice Oligui Nguema head of the Republican Guard as head of state. A video circulating on social media shows deposed President Bongo appealing to his international friends to speak out on his behalf. African Union Commission Chair Moussa Faki Mahamat has condemned what he called an attempted coup in Gabon. President Ali Bongo and his family have ruled the country for 56 years. His overthrow comes an hour after it was announced that he had won a third term with 64% of the vote. Frank Joktin is a Gabonese human rights and democracy activist. He tells me that Gabonese are rejoicing because for the first time in 56 years, they will sleep without a Bongo as their leader.
The Gabonese people are rejoicing. The Gabonese people are happy. They're satisfied. Like I said earlier, 56 years of a dynasty, of a family ruling over Gabon is finally over. So the Gabonese, for the very first time, are going to sleep in Gabon for a long period of time without a Bongo leading them or controlling the country. And that's very refreshing.
Yet, it seems the future of the country is uncertain because we don't know what the military is up to.
That is correct. But right now, the Gabonese people are rejoicing because they're free. They're free from a family that ruled over 56 years. And as you said, the military just took control of the country less than 24 hours. I hope that they will be sensitive to the Gabonese people. And we've been noticing that they've been walking in the street, talking to the Gabonese people, encouraging them not to destroy everything, that everything will be all right. So I think that they are sensitive to their people. And if they continue like that, I think it's a matter of time that they will relinquish power to a civilian government.
There are reports that the military junta has named a transition leader. Do you know him? What's your reaction?
I don't know him personally, but I know that he's the chief of the Republican Guard. So it's the branch of the army that is supposed to protect the president. And it's the branch of the army that is the most and the best equipped in Gabon. I'm very delighted to see that they chose this time to be on the side of the people. And instead of shooting at the people, this time they chose to be on the side of the people and free the people from a tyrannic regime.
Now, President Ali Bongo, there were reports earlier that he has made appeals to his, what he called his friends abroad, to make some noise on his behalf. What do you make of that?
Well, first of all, I think we all saw the picture, and I was kind of saddened to see him like that, because we can see that he's not even thinking properly, because he doesn't realize really what happened. He appears to be confused. He's asking where is his children, his son, his wife, and he's saying that they arrest him, and he doesn't seem to understand why he was arrested, and he doesn't know what's going to happen to him now. So he's a very confused man, and right now I feel really sad for him. But the truth of the matter is he's been in power for the last 14 years, and then he wanted to add 5 more years. He was not attentive to his people. I do not know who will be attentive to him. And the way that he's being kept, I mean, it looks like nobody brutalized him. So people are treating him better than he treated the Gabonese people.
And this all stemmed from elections that were held on Saturday, and the results were announced. So what do you make of the results of the election?
Yes, the result was made public, I believe, around 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, and it was declared that Ali Bongo won the election. But we all know, with the enthusiasm of the people in the ground, that there is no way that Ali Bongo could have won that election.
Frank Joktain is a Gabonese human rights and democracy activist. He was speaking with us from Toulouse, France. It was an eventful Wednesday in the city of Goma in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo, where a demonstration against the United Nations mission in the DRC was violently put down by Congolese security forces. The clashes left 7 people dead and over 100 arrested. Zanep Neti Zaide reports from Goma.
Gunshots woke up the residents of Goma's western quarters on Wednesday. Security forces were deployed to prevent a protest by a sect called La Foi Naturelle Authentique Messianique Vers les Nations, or the Genuine Messianic Natural Five Towards Nations. The sect is also known by its local name, Wazalendo. Moise Hangi, a follower of the sect, denounced the police violence. He says at around 4 a.m., the temple of the Wazalendo sect in Goma was the target of vandalism by the police. They killed compatriots at point-blank range. He exhorts the authorities to ensure the safety of citizens and that no motive can justify the use of lethal weapons due to the principle of proportionality, which are too powerful a punishment for the alleged crime. The spokesman for the Congolese army in North Kivu, Lieutenant Colonel Guillaume Njike Kaiko, confirms the death toll of 7, 6 civilians and 1 policeman. He says the defense and security forces have taken every precaution and professionally stopped the troublemakers who are playing into the hands of the M23 rebels. The provisional toll is as follows. In the ranks of the defense and security forces, a policeman stoned to death and several wounded on the side of the National Army, FRDC. Espoir Mwinuka is a human rights defender in North Kivu province. He condemns what he says is brutal repression and claims that children are among the victims. He says he doesn't understand how unarmed civilians can be hunted down at 3 o'clock in the morning. Human life is sacred, and he can't accept that young unarmed civilians should be gunned down. He says there are children under the age of 5 among victims of the barbarity. The figures so far disagree. There are reports of children being wounded, but none of them have at this point lost their lives. All activities was paralyzed in the town on Wednesday, and the police forces did not allow the demonstrators to approach the MONUSCO base to demand that it leave the country. For VOA Africa, I'm Zanem Netizaidi in Goma.
International observers and human rights defenders have called for safeguards in the possible Kenya-led peacekeeping mission to Haiti. They say a framework is needed due to Kenya's domestic police record and a grim history of intervention in Haiti. In a letter to the UN Security Council, Amnesty International says Kenya's human rights record should be examined in full before endorsing the deployment to Haiti. Last week, a 10-person Kenya delegation visited the Caribbean nation to assess the situation. VOA's Douglas Umpuga spoke with political analyst David Monda about the Kenya forces' human rights record.
I think it's a huge problem because Kenya police has not showered itself in glory with how it treats Kenyan citizens. There's been a long history of police brutality, lack of accountability, assassinations, unsolved killings with the Kenya police. But I think that the broader question here also is if the Kenya police or the international community then does not intervene in Haiti, then who will? Ultimately, there's no perfect police force. Even the New York Police Department here has its own internal problems, right? So something needs to be done in Haiti. And as much as the Kenya police have their tainted history, but I think the international community also really needs to think very closely about the chaos in Haiti. It's a failing state that's a really forgotten story. The situation in Haiti really has to be resolved quickly.
What would you say to those who say Kenya has enough problems of its own to be going across the ocean for peacekeeping purposes in Haiti?
That's a good point. But I think that perspective also is a little self-defeating because we know the major powers in the region, be it United States, which has had an interventionist policy in Haiti. We know France, which is a former colonial power, has had the horrible colonial legacy that's crippled Haiti for over 200 years now. We know Canada, which is a big French-speaking population, does not want to intervene. So if it is that Kenya should not intervene, then who will? But I think the positive side of the Kenyan pledge is that the developing world, the so-called global south, developing countries are also standing up and saying, even though we might be poor, we may not have big armies or navies, but we are willing to do something where even the superpowers have done nothing, particularly countries contiguous to Haiti, right, to the island of Hispaniola.
David Monda is a political analyst and professor of political science at the City University of New York. He spoke with my colleague Douglas Umpuga from New York. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, August 31st. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. At least 80% of Africa's population rely on traditional medicine for their basic health needs. According to the World Health Organization, there is a need to bring together ancient wisdom and modern science for the health and well-being of people. And as the world marks African Traditional Medicine Day today, Thursday, the WHO says it is committed to supporting countries to unlock their potential on traditional medicine. Maureen Odhiambo reports.
African Traditional Medicine Day takes place each year on August 31st by advocating for strengthening the linkage between traditional medicine and institutionalized care in line with the World Health Organization's strategy. According to the WHO, most countries in Africa use traditional medicine as the only healthcare service that's available, accessible, and affordable to many people on the continent. WHO Director General Tedros Ghebreyesus says, if scientifically validated, traditional medicine has the potential to bridge the gap in healthcare access for millions around the world.
Throughout history, people in all countries and cultures have used traditional healers, home remedies, and ancient medicinal knowledge to meet their needs for health and well-being. Traditional medicine is not a thing of the past.
Traditional health practitioners and traditional medicine are critical components of healthcare for millions of people, especially in rural areas. Harriet Chebet is a traditional health practitioner and the founder of Harriet's Botanicals, a traditional medicine company that retails indigenous medicine in Kenya, serving Africa and the diaspora market. She says the idea for her business came to her after she was treated in a traditional way for endometriosis, a condition in which tissue similar to the lining of the uterus grows outside the uterus. The condition can cause severe pain in the pelvis and make it harder to get pregnant.
I had this condition for 17 years since I was a teenager. So what happened in 2017 during my father's funeral, when I was in a lot of pain, a lady there, an old mama, approached me and said, "We're going to come and give you medicine tomorrow." And when they came, they gave me these traditional herbs or bark to boil. And for the first time in my life, I had a painless period. And that is how my business, Harriet's Botanicals, was born.
Chebet says traditional medicine should be regulated and that many traditional practitioners should be trained and have access to knowledge, as many of the practitioners in Africa are the elderly in marginalized areas. The contribution of traditional medicine as a major provider of healthcare service in Africa cannot be underestimated. WHO says countries should assess how best to incorporate traditional and complementary medicine into their health systems.
Traditional medicine has made enormous contributions to human health and has enormous potential. WHO is working to build the evidence and data to inform policies, standards, and regulations for the safe, cost-effective, and equitable use of traditional medicine. We urge all countries to commit to examining how best to integrate traditional and complementary medicine into their national health systems.
According to the World Health Organization, nearly 40% of pharmaceutical products today have a natural product basis and landmark drugs derived from traditional medicine, including aspirin, childhood cancer treatment, among others. It is estimated that at least 170 member states have reported to the WHO on the use of traditional medicine and have requested evidence and data to inform policies, standards, and regulations for its safety and cost-effective and equitable use. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojembo in Sacramento, California.
Gay rights activists in Nigeria are criticizing the arrest and detention this week of dozens of people who attended a same-sex wedding. It is one of the biggest mass arrests in recent years targeting the country's LGBTQ community. Timothy Obiezu has more from Abuja.
A Nigerian police spokesperson says 67 people remain in custody on charges they broke the law by attending the same-sex wedding in the Delta State town of Ekpan. The Delta State Police said they received information about Monday's wedding after officers on routine patrol Sunday randomly stopped one of the invited guests and interrogated him. It was not clear if he was stopped based on what he was wearing. The police raided the wedding venue on Monday and rounded up two grooms along with guests. Authorities also paraded the defendants before the media and said the accused will be made to face the law. Bright Edafe, the Delta State Police spokesman, spoke to VOA via phone.
We already have a demand letter from the court to still have them in custody because we still have one or two more evidence to bring up together.
Edafe said police also recovered materials including hard drugs and gay marriage ceremonial dresses during the raid. If convicted, the defendants face 14 years imprisonment according to an anti-homosexuality law that went into effect in 2014. Police said others accused in the case will be jailed for 10 years if convicted. The latest arrests come 5 years after police raided a hotel in Lagos and arrested 57 men for homosexuality. But criticism have been growing following the latest incident. Rights group Amnesty International condemned the arrests in a statement on X, the platform formerly known as Twitter, and asked authorities to, quote, "put an immediate end to this witch hunt," end quote. The group said the arrests discriminated based on perceived sexual orientation and gender identity, and that Nigeria's law was being increasingly used by officers to harass, blackmail, and extort victims. Kayode Somtochukwu Ani is the founder of Queer Union for Economic and Social Transformation.
Basic rights of privacy, of a freedom to association have been rolled back And it's worrying because you don't see public pushback against this, because these human rights abuses are launched on minorities, particularly minorities that the state knows that they can drum up moral panic about.
Edafi says he disagrees with activists defending the detainees.
If Amnesty International knows what they are doing, they will know that there is a law in this country that prohibits gay marriage. So calling the same government who put that law in place to take action, I wonder what kind of action they are requesting. This is Nigeria, and whoever must live in this country must live by the laws of the land.
Homosexuality is widely viewed as a Western import in many parts of Africa, including Nigeria. Timothy Obiezu, VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
Facing possible extinction, Namibia's desert adopted lions have now resorted to hunting octopus and squid on the beaches along the Atlantic Ocean. The abnormal behavior is the result of human-wildlife conflict, which has seen lions, which once roamed freely, lose a significant amount of their habitat to human encroachment. Vitalia Angula reports from Windhoek.
Less than 80 lions were sighted between November and February. A report on human-wildlife conflict compiled by the Ministry of Environment, Forestry and Tourism revealed. On the brink of extinction, without access to natural hunting grounds, the lions have adopted a peculiar behavior, hunting seafood, instead of red meat from springboks, impalas, kudu and giraffes. Dr. Conrad Brain, a veterinarian, has studied the lions and the impact of human encroachment on their habitat for the past 20 years now.
People are desperate and the lions are doing what they can, so they're getting poisoned and shot and killed and whatever. And then they're also pushing them further west. And you can know the last refuge is the beach, the coast. So the intertidal zone is proving to be quite a survival area for the lions. And they're eating octopus, fish, seals and cormorants.
Brain says the marine diet the lions have adopted have led them to have vitamin B1 deficiency that causes neural symptoms such as weight loss and rashes. Hemming Schoffmeyer is operations manager at Wilderness Safari, a tour operating company that is also involved in nature conservation. He says more people, more livestock, and the impact of prolonged drought are all contributing factors pushing Namibia's desert-adapted lions to near extinction.
We're in the middle of a 10-year drought. So drought basically takes away, as you would know, all feed for your plains game. Plains game numbers would drop. Predators don't have that much to be able to eat, and so they start to become a lot more prevalent in the areas where people are tending livestock. So during drought periods, your predators are moving right into where people are living.
Romeo Muyunda is the spokesperson at the Ministry of Environment, Forestry and Tourism. He said the most recent census, which began during November and concluded in February, counted 56 lions, of which 35 are female and 21 are male.
So the ministry will keep on monitoring these lions through our methods and established research methods, and also with the assistance of various stakeholders, will keep on trying to ensure that we put in place mitigation measures to ensure that these lions are actually well managed.
Although Namibia's desert-adapted lions have proven their resilience and long-term studies have not been undertaken, their seafood diet may be detrimental to the survival of the species in the long term. Vitalio Angula for VOA News, Windhoek, Namibia.
And that's it for this Thursday, August 31st edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for being our guest this morning. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I am James Barton in Washington, saying, have a great day, and please be safe, whatever you do.
Hi, I'm Kim Lewis, inviting you to listen every week as a panel of VOA and Washington-based journalists discuss the top domestic and international news stories. With our correspondents and sources from the White House, Capitol Hill, and elsewhere, we will bring you the inside stories from Washington. That's Issues in the News every week on The Voice of America.